Another thing that could be cool is custom, like, data-driven effects. So you could register an effect, and it would be similar to, like, an enchantment. You know, there's attributes it can grant, and also maybe it could take a function field, and while the player's got the effect, every tick it runs the function.
Hello, hello everyone. I'm Gears.
And I'm Mox Valix. And welcome to the Data Pack Podcast, episode 12.
Here we go. It's part 2 of episode 11. We are still talking about our Data Pack wish list, because turns out there's a lot of stuff from our Data Pack wish list, because Data Packs are far from perfect.
Indeed.
Anyway, I guess I can start.
Yep.
So, here's something which isn't necessarily something for data packs, but it is somewhat related to data packs. And sometimes I'm playing around in a world, and I'm playing around with some game rule, right? Maybe I set the command modification block limit, which is like the number of commands you can modify with a slash fill or slash clone. I change it to something different, and yeah. Or maybe I change the random tick speed or one of those things, you know, which has like some number which you don't know exactly what the default value is. Now, if I want to reset it to what the default is, I mean, I know, for example, that random tick speed is the default is just 3, but not everyone knows that. And so if I want to know what the default is, I have to like create a new world and look at the screen for all the game rules and see what the default is. I wish there was just a way to reset a game rule to what the default was. Like, and also potentially, because when you create a world, you get to decide what the game rules are in a certain game rule selection screen in the world creation screen, right? And potentially there could be a way to either reset it to the default value or to reset it to what it was when the world was created. I think that could be useful as well.
Yeah.
Honestly, not too sure how useful that would be in data packs. The latter might be a bit because, you know, sometimes you got to like quickly turn off a game rule to like do something. For example, in Code of Copper, we temporarily disable the do tile drops game rule for when we're breaking a block with the place function. And just to make sure we don't accidentally run into the command limit there and then not enable it and like have the just like do a like completely soft lock the world by like having tile drops turned off, we have like a special system which sets a flag saying, hey, by the way, tile drops is still turned off. So, and then the next tick, we just essentially check if that's set, and then we turn off tile drops or turn back on tile drops just to be sure. But let's say they're in a world where, I don't know, maybe they're in a like creative testing world and they just wanted tile drops off for, you know, just for the purposes of like not being annoying, and not getting like items everywhere, then our Code of Copper data pack would turn on tile drops basically after it did the place function. And so that might be annoying for people. So what I've done previously is you can execute store the result of doing slash game rule to see what it's set to, and then I set it to what I want to, and then do the thing, and then basically check, just do execute store onto a score, and then check the score afterwards. But it would be nice to just be like, yeah, reset it to whatever it was before.
Yeah. And something like maybe even, because I feel like as well, players often change the game rules, like they don't exactly remember to do them all at world creation.
Yeah, that too.
And so they end up setting them after the fact.
Yeah, if there was like a way to set that as the default for that world.
Yeah, or even have like a way to set a temp game rule, and then you can revert afterwards.
And then just reset it. That could be nice.
But yeah, that would definitely be useful, because there's a couple times in data packs where you do want to temporarily change a game rule for, like, because we, like in Code of Copper, we're doing that because we want the break to play those, the breaking particles or the breaking sound. And so we worked out.
And it's, also, it's not just that, it's also containers with items in will only drop their containing items if you use set block destroy.
Right.
If you just do set block replace, it just completely deletes it.
Yeah.
And so that's basically, that was the main reason. There was a bug in previous versions where it would like,
Right, right.
But yeah, the nice side effect of that is that you also get the little particles and maybe a sound even. I'm not sure about the sound, but definitely the particles.
Yeah. I think it plays the sound from memory.
But yeah, the tile drops, basically, because otherwise, say you've got a chest and you break it, if you have tile drops on true, then it drops the chest item as well. But we've already inserted the chest item into the golem's inventory, so then we duplicate it, basically.
Mm.
So essentially we have to, we turn it off, to ensure that that doesn't happen. So, I think it would be nice. Like, I can imagine, for example, a scenario where you want to somehow teleport a player to their spawn point for whatever reason, like, without... And so, to do that, you basically, you turn death messages off, you turn on immediate respawn, and you turn on keep inventory, and then you kill them. And they just basically teleport back to their respawn point without any other side effects, really.
Mm.
But then you got to disable those afterwards. And then, but yeah, say they might have been playing with immediate respawn on for whatever reason, or they were already playing with keep inventory to make it easier or something. Then you like, you basically have to store it on a scoreboard and then set it back to that. But it would be nice to just be able to, like, set a temporary game rule and then set it back.
Yeah, definitely.
All right, your turn?
Yeah, okay. So my one is entities riding players, right?
Oh, yeah.
So recently we got the slash ride command. I guess it's not recent anymore. It's, like, a year old at this point. But we got the ability...
3W03A.
Yep, the greatest snapshot ever conceived. So yeah, we got the ability to make anything ride anything, basically, with one exception. Nothing can ride a player, not other players, not other entities, just can't ride players for whatever reason, I don't know why. You can't
ride markers either, by the way.
But that one's more reasonable because markers don't really exist client-side, so you can kind of understand why you can't ride a marker. But
players don't exist client side. What are you talking about?
Lies.
It's almost like the client represents the player. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, and I do wonder, and there's I'm assuming there's a good reason for why it can't do this, and I think it's because players don't have the, like, passengers NBT, and having things ride players is, like, kind of modifying the player's NBT kind of thing. But at the same time, it's like, come on, let an entity ride a player. That would be so cool. And as well, it would solve a bunch of issues where, like, for example, you got, like, an interaction entity that you want to follow around the player's head. It's annoying having to teleport it, and it lags, and it just all around sucks. And making it ride the player would fix that. So that's on my wish list. Make slash ride work, and also just think of how cool it would be to have a stack of players. That would be funny.
Yeah,
come on.
It would be cool to, like, have, like, a way where you could, like, pick up mobs and just carry them around.
Like that. Would be cool to make the play. One block at a time snap. Like the
April Fools.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, that, that
like,
would be cool.
Yeah, do that with the data pack and just have them like sitting on your head.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Okay, next one of mine is to have non-square interaction entities, because pretty sure interaction entities have two size properties, right? It has horizontal and vertical size, right? Or width and height.
Yeah.
But what that means is that there can be whatever height and whatever width, but the width is always a square, right? It's always the same size in X and Z directions. And sometimes you don't really want that. Like, for example, one use of interaction entities I've seen is to, like, lock a door. So, basically, if you put an interaction entity over a door, then you can't click it and you can't open it. And, well, the somewhat annoying thing is that obviously doors aren't a square, and so basically you have to create an interaction entity that's an entire block by an entire block, which means it sticks out a bit,
yeah,
and causes other sort of annoyances. And so if you could make one which was like the correct exact width, and like I wish there was just like an X, Y, and Z size. It would just be like size be like an array, just like the display entities, right? They just have a scale of just three values in one for each direction. Like it wouldn't be difficult to do that, but anyway.
Yeah, it's a weird choice that it's just width and height, but it's
not possible.
Yeah. Classic Mojang implementation. Just miss out one of the axes. Beautiful. Yeah, that would be a good feature. I mean, what could get even more interesting is, and they would never do this, but interaction entity shapes. Like, kind of a circle one, like different shapes. It'd be very cursed, but it'd be funny. I'd like that.
Or like a perfectly bed-shaped.
Yeah, thing. You could set it to be the
hitbox.
The shape of a block or something. Yeah, that'd be cool. Okay, to move on to my next one. This one is not necessarily data pack related, but well, I mean, it's data pack related, but it's not necessarily part of the data pack. But this would be custom entity models, right? So we've got a way to add custom item models, and we've got a way to add custom block models, but what we don't have a way to do
not
is...
Not really. Oh, no, sorry. We can.
I was
confusing it with custom, like custom model data type thing. You can change the model of a block. Yeah.
You can change the model of a block. You can change the model of an item. You can't change the model of an entity.
No, they're all hard coded.
All hard coded. And the worst thing is like for years we've had, I think it's called CEM, and it's implemented into Optifine and other mods implemented as well. And it's like a way for resource packs to do custom entity models and animations and everything, but it's not in vanilla, and it's so limiting. Like, you in vanilla you just end up putting a head on a zombie or a skeleton, and that's your custom entity, and it just kind of sucks. I'm sorry, like your data pack, you're either doing a massive like set of complicated item and block displays to get your custom mob going, or you usually will just put a player head on a zombie and be like, yeah, this is the epic boss fight that I made.
It's a zombie with a skeleton head. Yeah. I think the main trouble you'd run into there is the animations, basically, because obviously items, you can have texture animations on items, but you can't have model animations. And like blocks, with the exception of like a chest, but I think a chest is implemented separately, right?
Chests, that's a block entity as well.
From minimal block entity experience with modding, that's hard coded.
Like making those things data driven would be really cool. But I imagine it'll be a lot harder for them to do.
Like, there's a lot of different animations which different mobs play, right?
Yeah.
All the walking animation and the hitting animation and all sorts of stuff. So yeah, it would, I think it would be, that's probably the main limitation. But it would be cool to be able to define, even define what those animations look like in resource packs.
Yeah.
Like,
well, I mean, yeah. Like, for example, there's a resource pack which does require CEM or Ford, Fabric, well, actual aneurysm moment right there. Optifine or Optifine equivalents.
Yeah.
I think it's called Fresh Animations. A lot of Hermits and Hermitcraft use it. And that's, like, customized. And that's a resource pack, right? So it is, like, the mod's still there. But they have made it data-driven. Like, those animations are implemented in a data-driven way. So it is it is possible to, like, to implement that in Minecraft, because, like, modders have done it. And
yeah.
So that would be really cool to have, like, either implement that format or a similar format to be able to customize animations and entity models and stuff. That would be quite nice. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, Okay, my turn now.
Yep.
So, the next few, well, a while ago, it was, in fact, it was right at the beginning of my YouTube channel. It was probably my, I don't know, fifth video or something. Somewhere in the first 10, I would say. I did a video which was, like, ideas for commands to be added in Minecraft. And so I've taken some of those and repurposed them for this, because I mean, it was a long time ago and I was still somewhat new to data packs at that point. I mean, I had quite a lot of experience with them, but, you know, I was a little bit, you know, naive and anyway. And so some of them, interestingly, have been implemented in one way or another since that video. You know, in, like, the whole data pack change from, like, 1.19.4 all the way up to 1.21, all sorts of stuff has changed, and so some of it is now possible in vanilla. But the first one is sort of partially implemented. Basically, my idea was a command slash health, right? And slash health gave you essentially a variety of operations for working with the health of different entities. So I'm pretty sure you could do a few things. You could just literally add or subtract raw values from it, which would basically do it with no effects. It would just change the amount. But then you could also do, like, a damage, right? Which is, we now have that slash damage, right? And you could also do, like, a heal, which had various parameters. I don't remember the exact details now, but I think you could also, like, yeah, you could do damage, which would just, like, literally subtract that number from your health, or you could do damage, which would, like, respect armor and stuff like that. And it was a little more versatile than the slash damage command we have, because while slash damage is very useful for dealing damage to players, the sort of annoying thing is that you can't easily, like, heal a player by a certain number of hearts still. Yeah,
that's still stuck. You basically still have to do that with instant health.
Yeah.
Which is annoying.
Which gives you very limited control of how much health they gain and stuff. So I think it would be kind of nice if there was, like, a bit more diversity to that.
Yeah.
I think I had slash health set, which would just literally set your health to a set value.
Mm.
And then I had slash health damage and slash health heal, I think. And then various options in those, which it would be nice to have some more options with that, because I think that would be pretty useful.
Or just allow us, you know, negative damage, you know? Theoretically, that would heal.
Yeah.
Negative damage.
Yeah.
That's the bad
That sounds route. Like the kind of thing... That sounds like the kind of thing Mojang would do.
Honestly. That the worst implementation. Yep. There we go. Negative damage. Yeah.
All right, go ahead.
Okay. So the my one this one would be really, really big, I think. Would open up a lot of possibilities with data packs. But itemless and entityless input detection. So a way to get just at any point in time with a data pack, left click, right click, and maybe even keyboard input
Yep,
to.
that's on my list.
Aha, got another
That was
one.
in my video, in my original video.
Yeah. But just the way
Yep.
to just being able to detect that would be so useful because it would open up heaps of possibilities for UI, right? Heaps of possibilities for doing custom key bindings. It would make casting spells with data packs easier. You're no longer tied
Yeah.
to having
You
to.
probably, yeah. You probably wouldn't define it. Now, this is something which in my original video, I didn't exactly like how I did it. I basically, my original idea was to have like a scoreboard criteria for pressing a key. Like one scoreboard criteria for each key, which like near, I don't think that really makes sense. What would be better, I think, is if you, because the way that Minecraft's key binding system works is that you have all like the you have like a resource location for each key bind, and then that is then displayed in settings. You can bind it to whatever you want. So you would like define a key bind, and then you would have like a default key, and then you just essentially detect key binds by a resource location, just like how that, and then it lets the user rebind it to whatever they want. Which I think is probably a better way of doing that.
Yeah, and you could have like a keybind registry, and that it would run a function like the in the data. It would have a function that runs, or it would basically have a like an advancement reward kind of thing, but for whenever that input is done, and then you could go from there. Yeah, that would be good.
Yeah, I think that would be cool.
Yeah, because like right
Well,
now.
theoretically, anyway, what I'm saying is theoretically, it could be defined instead of in a file. You could literally just define it with, you could have like a slash key command, and then like do like slash key add, and then you give it the resource location, and then the default key, just like you would with a scoreboard, for example. And then, I don't know, because there's not a whole lot of stuff you would define in like a JSON file. I don't know if, and then you could like dynamically add keys and stuff
Like,
at runtime, which would be cool.
can I just say that if scoreboards were implemented in modern day, they definitely would have been a registry in a data pack rather than scoreboard
True.
objectives add.
Yeah, that's true.
It is a weird system, the scoreboard system. It doesn't
A little,
exactly
yeah.
fit with the rest of data pack stuff now.
I mean, boss bars and teams are also use the same thing, but they're also quite old.
Okay,
But
boss
like,
bars,
yeah.
it's so confusing.
Yeah, and teams and boss bars use sort of similar thing, because you create a boss bar, and then you like use slash boss bar modify or whatever it is. And the same with teams, you're like, well, yeah, whereas now it would just be a JSON file with all the config values just in the JSON file itself.
Which, in my
But the
opinion, would
nice
be
thing
better.
about, well, and I guess I'll sort of tie this into my next one, which is like having some way to like add stuff to a registry at runtime. Because like an advancement, a recipe, all the stuff like that, all of it, you have to do it at like, you have to manually write out the files and stuff. But it would be cool to like, I mean, yeah, because that's the nice thing about scoreboards and stuff. You can add a scoreboard like whenever you want during the game's running process. So it could be kind of cool to have a way to like register a new advancement using empty function, or register a new recipe or something like that.
And then, like, it could, because there's already a convention for that. There's Minecraft, like, there's the generated folder in Worlds, and it's for generated, like, stuff. Like, for example, when you use a structure block, right?
Yeah.
It stores it in the same kind of way that a data pack uses it, but in the generated folder. And so Minecraft could have other things be dynamically generated like that, and then would be just specific to that world. And yeah, that would be quite cool. I don't know how you...
I'm not sure how that would work.
Yeah.
How you would define JSON in empty function.
I guess you would just write the JSON in the command.
Yeah.
And then you can macro it. Let's go.
Yeah, it would be kind of weird, but...
It'd be weird, but anyway, cool.
It would be cool.
You know, something I really have been tempted to do multiple times is, like, kind of get all of these, like, ideas that we've had for data packs and just make them into a mod as just, like, a testing ground for all these data pack ideas. And then just be kind of like, hey, Mojang, you know, we've made a mod, check it out. And then hopefully, you know, they might see some ideas they like. And, you know, it's just proof of concept mod for data packs that we could, like, try out data packs using that mod and stuff. That's something I wouldn't mind doing at some point, especially now that we've gotten into modding a bit.
Yeah, we've yet to talk about that on the podcast, but yeah, I'm sure we'll do an episode on it at some point. But yeah, I've also had the idea, like, it would be cool if there's just a mod which just, like, adds all these things and tries to implement them.
Yeah.
There is something similar. One of the admins in Datapack Hub, Cobblestone, he is he's not really a Datapack developer. I don't know, he doesn't make Datapacks. He's just sort of part of the admin team. He helps with, like, the website and stuff. But he also does plugins and mods and stuff. And he's created this, I'm pretty sure, I think it's a plugin called Cocktail.
Right.
I don't remember exactly. I don't remember whether it's a plugin or a mod or what, but yeah, that sort of is a similar thing where he's added, like, various things, like, anyway, he's added a few cool things. I think he added slash damage before that was a thing, and a few things like that.
Slash motion. Cool.
Yeah, probably.
That one's so requested. I mean, slash ride kind of fixed the slash motion problem. Kinda. I don't know. It's still not the best solution, but placated a bunch of people, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. I guess it's your turn now.
My turn? Okay. This one's a fun one. UUID conversion. So, this is annoying, right? Minecraft uses UUIDs in two formats. One format is an array of four integers. And the other format is, you know, the more typical, like, hexadecimal UUID format, which is a bunch of hexadecimal numbers dash separated. And so oftentimes in commands, you use the hex, but then obviously in MBT, you use the integer array. And there's no way to really convert between them. You have to implement...
We should make a library for it. We should add a moxlib module.
We should add a moxlib module, yeah. But
a dual way thing.
Mm.
But yeah, it would be nice to have a built-in way to do that.
A built-in way to do that. And also, I feel like a module is going to be quite expensive to do. And usually the reason why you're using UUIDs is because it saves on a bunch of... it's a lot more performant to reference an entity. And I guess this goes back to last episode's custom selectors kind of thing, but it's a lot more performant to directly reference an entity with its UUID or at S than it is using other selectors. And so, yeah, like being able to convert the integer array into the hex format, which could then be used with macros to, you know, target the particular entity would be quite good.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not sure how they would implement the conversion. Like, I don't know how it would do it. Like, maybe just have some field that, like, takes in, like it could really just be a side effect of something where it, like, takes in the integer array and it just, the field usually uses a hex or something and it just auto-converts it. Like, there's a bunch of random entity fields that do this, like, conversion stuff. So that could be how it's implemented, but obviously that's not, those aren't really intentional. Those are, like, side effects that we exploit. So I don't know how, if it was to be an intentional feature, it would be implemented, but it would be nice. It would be nice.
Yeah, for sure. Again, it's like getBlock. It's like, how would that work? Because it's got, like, return a non-integer value to somewhere, and it's sort of a weird thing, but yeah, it definitely would be cool somehow.
Mm.
Okay, so the next one, I'm sure most people will agree with me on this one. More data-driven recipes. So you can, recipes for crafting tables, furnaces, smithing tables, they're all data-driven.
Yep.
You can modify those. But brewing recipes, I wish you could create your own custom brewing recipes, as well as what other kind of recipes are there? No, stone cutting is data-driven. I mean, brewing's the main one that comes to mind. Are there any other things which should be?
I mean, allowing custom items in the loom to assign patterns to particular items would be cool. Because right now there's the banner pattern items, but
right, and that's data driven.
That's data driven as to which pattern goes to which item. But what's, like, it would be cool to also, like, you know, accept a custom item in the loom to have a secret pattern that's just on that item. That's something I really wanted to do with my many more banners data pack. But unfortunately couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be cool. And there's probably another workstation.
Just thinking,
I mean, cartography doesn't really...
Cartography only has a very specific set.
It's got, like, 2-3 things you can do in it. So I'm not sure it really makes sense. Although they are technically data driven, they're some of the special recipes I mentioned last episode. So you can, but you can't, anyway. Brewing recipes is the main one. It would be very nice to have custom brewing recipes.
I feel like that the brewing system is so weird. I do wonder how, like, I think we do need a brewing overhaul at some point. And maybe it would come with a brewing overhaul, because I feel like potions are just such a nightmare to use, and they just—I don't know. I feel like there's a lot of lost potential with potions and brewing.
Yeah,
I
think so. Yeah,
that could really be improved upon. And obviously, custom potions would be really cool. I mean, another thing that could be cool is custom, like, data-driven effects. So you could register an effect, and it would be similar to, like, an enchantment. You know, there's attributes it can, grant, and also maybe it could take a function field, and while the player's got the effect, every tick it runs the function, right? So custom data-driven effects. This isn't actually on my list. I just thought of it now, but data-driven effects would be really cool. Because, like, we seem to be, like, now that there's precedence for it with, like, the enchantment system, there's a lot of functionality there that's data-driven. Like, that's an impressive amount of customizability. And I feel like it's not too big of a leap to be like, well, effects could be like this, you know? Because I feel like effects are rather simple. Because they really just apply attribute modifiers for the most part. I mean, there's a custom, there's a couple that are, like, you know, bad omen and stuff, but those are, like, outliers. Bad omen, night vision, invisibility, fire resistance. Yeah. But like jump boost, speed, strength, health regeneration. Boost. I don't think that's a...
Regeneration is special.
Is special.
Absorption is technically special too.
Yeah, those are special.
But resistance.
Resistance, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of those things. Slowness.
Yeah.
All the inverses of those, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's another thing, because, yeah, like, if you want to add, like, a custom effect to your data pack, you basically just have to retexture an existing effect, like, luck or bad luck, usually.
Okay, why do those exist? I've never understood why you would need those effects.
Apparently they have something to do, I think they, like...
They increase loot in, like, they improve your odds with loot tables.
Yeah.
But I've never actually seen a use for it.
Certain ways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They seem like
it's a... like fishing or something.
Fishing. they It's another one that seems like it's a half-implemented feature. It was like someone had an idea at some point. And then it clearly just never went anywhere, but it's still in the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, data-driven effects would be really cool. Whose turn are we on?
Okay, so I guess mine, because you came up with effects. Here's one which it can be pretty annoying sometimes, which is that slash schedule, when you slash schedule a function... it loses all its context.
Yes.
Which makes sense. I understand why, right? Because if you execute as an entity, schedule it, and then the entity dies, or the player leaves, or something like that, then context is broken. But I feel like there should be a way to just, like, save the context. Mm. And if the context gets broken somehow, like the entity dying, just don't execute it.
Yeah.
Like, just a way to do, yeah, to just save the context.
Yeah, or just even like, schedule. Like, it doesn't even have to save the whole context, like, just schedule as, maybe just like have schedule as and at, maybe. Just like have it, like, it doesn't have to remember the location it was at last time, it just has to, you know, rerun as that entity, preferably. Would be would be really useful, because it's annoying. Like you end up having interim functions. That's basically it schedules an interim functions that runs the selector to get the entity back, and then runs the function that you want it to schedule.
But that like
it's just annoying. it's got performance.
But that can cause other issues. Like you got to let then tag, like what. Basically, if you want to have, like, each individual entity with their own clock, you basically have to just have a score, a scoreboard timer. But it'd be really nice if you could have, like, a player does something, and then you have, like, a some sort of delay, and then you say, okay, now, after 2 seconds of them doing that thing, run something else. But then have it separate counter for each entity, because you can't really do that with slash schedule. You have to use scoreboard counters, which...
Yeah, that would be nice. Also, another cool thing with a schedule would be, like, maybe some way of, like, scheduling, rather than it necessarily being a schedule, maybe another command where it's, like, you set an amount of time and it keeps looping, like, it keeps running every tick until the time runs out. Mm-hmm. So it would be, like, a countdown kind of thing. That would be another cool one, rather than having to set up a countdown.
That could be cool, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, I keep coming up with new features or new wish lists as we're going.
No, I'm doing that too. A lot of these...
Oh, nice.
My list's about as long as when we started this episode, so...
Nice.
Yeah,
nice.
We still got plenty to get through.
Yeah.
Okay, your turn.
Okay, so this is actually the final one I've got written down, but I'm sure I'll come up with more as we keep talking. But pack overlays in subfolders.
Oh, yeah.
Now, okay, so for context, which release gave us pack overlays? I don't remember.
Oh, Probably 1.20.
I think it might have been
1.19.4.
Was it like 1.20.2 or something? It was like, I feel like it was a...
Maybe it was 1.20.2, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it was a
mid... That was when they added macros.
Yeah, I think it was the same time. And so basically, for anyone that doesn't know what a pack overlay is, it's basically so that you can set overrides for a particular pack format. And it's a way to make data packs have backwards compatibility, right? So it's there. If you wanted to, you could, build your data pack to support multiple versions. And it's something we're planning, later down the line in Zoglin to have a nice way of doing, which would have essentially compiled to a bunch of pack overlays. But the problem with it, however, it's great in concept, and we have used it before. It's quite nice. The problem with it is that you have each overlay you have to put in the root folder. So each overlay folder you have to put in the root folder, and you can't set them in a subfolder, which is just baffling. It's
so weird.
Choice. It's a baffling choice, and it would be so much it just pollutes your root data pack folder with a bunch of annoying pointless folders that are only doing a couple of changes, and it's please let us organize this into an overlays folder or something. It's a thing that would be so simple to change, and it would just improve I would probably use them a lot more if that was that, if it did that. It kind of makes me not want to use them because it, kind of ruins my folder structure. That's on the wish list. Pack overlays and subfolders.
Yeah. Okay, so my next thing on the list is, I don't know exactly how this would work, but some way to essentially do some of the more complex interactions using data packs. So for example, what happens when you right click a block and a door, for example, when you right click it, it toggles state. And having a way to do that with data packs, or having a way to somehow craft a recipe using a data pack. Now, you can technically do that now if you have it requires a physical location, but if you have a crafter, the new crafter, you can put the items in and then trigger it with redstone and see what pops out.
Yeah.
But it's
a bit janky.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it kind of is. Basically, it would be cool to be have a way to do that with data packs and do some of those interactions.
Yeah, slash craft, and you have to write out items. You have to write out 9 items. You can use underscore for a blank space. And then you have to specify a storage or inventory or something in the end to put it into. That would just be the longest part.
Yeah, I have no idea how that would work, but...
A nice way to craft items would be great. Because we would definitely use that in Code of Copper, because we wanted the golem to be able to craft items. Which is something where I think we're still planning in a future release to be able to do. And now that we've got the crafter, it's probably easier than it would have been before.
Before it was basically impossible because you can't read registries with the data pack. You would basically just have to hard code recipes, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, which is obviously not great. Not do that, yeah.
I guess since your list is done, I'll keep going.
Yep.
So next one is... data modify for players. Now, I know this is a thing which Yeah, with which
they don't want you doing.
Yeah, but like I feel like if they could just make it so that some MBT entries are writable and some aren't. Mm. Like motion, for example. Like surely you can data modify the motion field, right? Like you can set motion, like, okay, let's say they add a slash motion command.
Yeah.
What's the difference between that and data modify the motion field?
Who knows? I think the point they were trying to say with the slash data commands is that it's physically changing the data on the disk or something. And then
right.
I think like how it works is it kind of reloads the entity once you change it, and you can't really yeah. reload the player. I don't know.
Mm.
I don't know. I don't really understand yeah. what they said, but
yeah, well, my idea was to have like not necessarily just be able to modify players, but like have a separate subcommand like data modify player, and that has like some different logic to it
mm.
that somehow makes it possible.
Yeah, definitely having.
I don't know.
Another thing to add to that is like even if we didn't get to edit some fields, having a player specific data storage would be really useful.
Mm, yeah, without having to use macros for, like, UUIDs and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Just being able to, like, store, like, straight store data against the player, I guess, would just...
Yeah.
It would just, like, reduce so much overhead. Like, I mean, it's now with macros, it's not hard to do player-specific storage, and before you could do it as well with, like, entity ID and, like, you know, iterating arrays. But yeah. Both systems are just clunky, and
mm-hmm.
it's just a bit annoying. Like being able to do data modify player something would be be quite nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and I think it could be cool, like as an initial thing, just to be able to store arbitrary MBT data on any entity. Because items support arbitrary MBT data, markers support arbitrary MBT data.
Yeah.
But other entities don't. Mm. Like,
you can
do it sort of with like an item display, for example, with the custom data field of the item itself, but that's kind of janky and doesn't really work for other entities.
Yeah. Yeah, it is quite annoying that you can't do that. Like I feel like it's kind of a no-brainer to just allow it. Because there's so many times where you're like, I just want to write some storage specific to this entity, but then, you know, doesn't allow you to. Then you end up like,
it's kind of annoying.
With regular entities, you end up writing a marker onto them. Like, for example, mm-hmm. Code of Copper, we've got the golem
we got the
itself,
which stores all the.
Yeah.
The brain.
So yeah, we've got it's actually three entities in one. It's the chess minecart,
the display entity.
Yeah.
And the marker.
Oh, and this is a mini data pack wish list here. Nice mini one. A way to make minecarts invisible. Or specifically chess minecarts invisible. Because just being
nice
able
for
to
UIs and stuff.
Yeah. And it's just
UIs.
Annoying that, like, you can't scale them, firstly. Like, if we could scale mm-hmm. them, it would kind of, like, mitigate it somewhat, because you could just scale it down to not be sticking out of a block and stuff like that. But what would just be better is, and you can make the chest inside it invisible, because for whatever reason, you can set any block to display. I don't know why that's a feature. But it is. I guess it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing it uses that. Like, I'm guessing it's because they all inherit from like the command block, the spawner, and the chest minecart. Probably inherit from the same class.
And hopper minecart and furnace minecart.
Yeah. So that's probably why it has that MBT data. But
mm-hmm.
It's just
the minecart itself. Yeah.
Yeah, the minecart itself just can't be invisible, and if it could be. Like, if it maybe if it just even had a hidden field like an armor stand does, would be...
Yeah, invisible.
Yeah, invisible, yeah.
Invisible, true.
Visible, yep, or nice. Respond to the invisibility effect. Either or, I don't mind. Just let us make them invisible.
Yep, yeah.
Yeah, it would be good.
Okay, shall I give my next one?
Yep.
So, this is sort of... These are a couple of commands which exist on Bedrock Edition, which don't exist on Java, and I think would be super cool to have as part of a datapack toolset, which would definitely allow us to do stuff which we can't do already. So the first one is slash animation, where basically you can play an arbitrary animation on an arbitrary entity. I don't know exactly how it works, but I'm pretty sure you can, like, play, for example, the Piglin dance animation on, like, a chicken if you wanted to.
Huh.
And it somehow does that. I don't know how it works, but it's cool.
Yeah, I would imagine that it wouldn't be too compatible with Java's animation system.
No, probably not. But the other one is slash camera.
Oh.
Which is basically lets you manipulate the player's camera separately from their body. So you can, like, detach it. You can use it to create, like, interesting effects and stuff, and, like, cutscenes and all sorts of things.
Yeah.
Without, like, transforming the player to spectator and doing stuff and then TPing them back or whatever.
Yeah, that would be really useful. I feel like as well the FNAF fan games made in Minecraft would pop off then.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure somebody made something like that in Bedrock because that was quite recent. I think that was like around 1.19.4,
yeah,
1.20 maybe.
Yeah,
I remember when that came out and I was seeing some cool stuff done with it. But yeah, you can't do it in Java,
yeah,
which is kind of annoying.
Yeah, that one would be really great. And then, of course, you would end up having the free cam data pack that moves the camera around, somehow detects, like keeps teleporting the player back in the same spot, but gets the direction they're going.
Uh-huh.
That would be a good feature.
Okay. These next two are pretty short. They're just little things which would be nice to have. So the first one is execute if function with a macro. So there's this execute subcommand added somewhat recently, execute if function, which is where you basically check the return value of the function and then do something if it returns non-zero, basically. I think... But you can't provide any macro arguments.
Yeah.
You can only just run the function.
Yeah.
Which is kind of annoying.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you want to run it with a macro, then you've got to, like, do extra stuff.
Yeah.
So I think, yeah, it would be nice little feature if you could just run execute if function with a macro. And on a similar note, they both sort of... I mean, yeah, this one we talked about again a couple of episodes ago, where when I was telling you about this thing I wrote for my parser, where like if one parser failed, it would just return, and then if you just did slash return run function, if the function didn't return, it wouldn't return from that function. And so I would just basically return from each... I just do return run function, parse this first bit, return run function, parse this next bit. And then if it essentially got to the end without returning, that means it all succeeded. So it would be cool if there was like some way to do return if, and then like do some optional value, and it only returns if that value exists.
Yeah.
So you could do like return if scoreboard players get... And then if the score doesn't exist, it doesn't return. But if it does, then it returns the value of it. And you could potentially do a similar thing with, like, execute if function, right? You could do, like, execute... That's the other thing I was trying to do. I was trying to do, like, execute if function once they basically patched that, I was trying to do execute if function, blah, 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 then return.
Yeah.
But then most of the parsing things took a macro argument.
Yeah.
And so that wasn't possible either, which made it a bit of a headache. And so I just essentially didn't touch the project, and I haven't touched it since.
Yep.
It's now probably 2 years later. No, like a year later, maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
And I still haven't touched it. Because, yeah. Anyway. Yeah, so I have one more on my list after this.
Yep.
And this isn't really something which necessarily DataX should have, and I don't think it's something that Mojang are considering adding anytime soon. But it would be pretty cool to have a way to make HTTP requests with DataPax.
Yes!
And we've talked about this a lot and speculated about the possibility of somehow doing that with, what's it, slash transfer?
Slash transfer, yeah.
Which is... Yeah, but it would be so cool if you could make a data pack which sends requests to the internet and gets data back and does stuff. But let's face it, that's never happening.
Yeah. I mean, the other one is if
a man can dream.
A man can dream. No, but like if you know, if they allowed player skulls to also just not be on like textures.minecraft.com or .minecraft.net, and just you know, if that was allowed to be any site, then that would also be a way of doing it.
Yeah,
because then it could send like that would be two way city. But yeah, the transfer is the most likely one of being able to do it, and we have been kind of planning to at some point just try it out and write.
Yeah, I think we discussed it.
Yeah. It's obviously you need, like, a player, at least one player, and that player's got to be fine bouncing around between a fake server and a normal Minecraft server.
Yeah. Actually, okay, I've just thought of one more, which is basically, at the moment, there's no easy way to... Well, okay, basically, the only way to make custom commands is with slash trigger.
Yeah.
And that's somewhat limited because the only thing you can do is provide it with a number. Mm. And it would be cool to be able to set up some sort of way to do a slash trigger. And I know a slash trigger is just a scoreboard, so it would have to be reworked somehow. But like have it take more than just a number as the thing you're setting it to, and just like have a way to take in more arguments somehow.
Yeah.
And be like trigger and then give it a string or something. That would be pretty cool. To be able to add, and detect.
Or even data driven commands that can run functions.
Yeah, that too.
That would be cool.
That would be very cool.
Alright. I think unless you've got any others, I think it's probably a good place to wrap it up.
I think that's it. Yeah. Cool. This was fun. I enjoyed talking about that. And yeah, it was good. Like there was some overlap between the two of our lists, but not too much.
Yeah. For the most part, we came up with fairly different sets of ideas. Yeah. So that was good.
Like I'm sure given enough time, we'd probably come up with somewhat similar things, because there's a lot of things which we found are somewhat limiting, but we've all some of mine are from like various projects I've worked on in the past, and they're very specific situations, like the return if thing. Like I doubt many people have run into that before, so yeah. But anyway, I think I enjoyed that. And hopefully you enjoyed listening to our suggestions. And if you have any ideas of your own about things that Mojang should add to data packs, leave them in the comments. Or, I don't know, you can't really leave a comment if you're not listening on YouTube. But, join our Discord server and tell us there or something. And yeah, I guess we will see you in the next one.